This is Lizzie Kehoe. I am here with Betty Neely. Could you please say and spell your full name for me?
Betty D. Neely, BETTY D period NEELEY.
Okay, today is October 30th. 2017. We are in Betty's home in St. Louis on 416 East Bradford Street. Betty, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
Thank you, and thank you for participating. So just to get started, could you tell me a little bit about where you come from?
I was born in a place called Williford, Arkansas, 1936, August the 17th. Both sides of my family came from Arkansas. I was there until the Second World War. When that started, my parents came to St. Louis to work with the war effort and probably to keep from starving to death in Arkansas. And so then we moved up here. I remember a little bit about living here on Washington Avenue, and we had a room. Back then, they took all the big houses and made little rooms out of them so people would have a place to stay while they worked. And I remember one day my mom and my aunt left, and they locked the door and said, "Don't open this until we come back." And as an adult, I'm thinking, "Holy crap, what would happen if the place caught on fire and I was trapped in that room?" But, that's the way they did things back then. I spent a lot of summers going back to Arkansas because there was really nobody to take care of me. Everybody was working, so I would go and spend the summers with my grandparents when school was out. Lived several places in the city. Can't think of the name of the street. Off of Natural Bridge, I remember living there. And then we lived at Tar Grove in Norfolk, which is really close to our present-day gay area. Graduated from Adams Grade School on Tar Grove. I always busy person. I always had a lot of things to do. I worked in the confectionery next door to my house, and there was also a cleaner's there. Sometimes on Saturday, I would work in there. And I was always busy person. And I also had a sister 9 years younger than me that I pretty much had to have in my back pocket all the time and drag her around wherever I went. And we are very close even today. She lives in Santa Cruz, California, and they're coming here for Christmas. I have a niece and a nephew, and that's pretty much my family at this point. I have some second cousins, but I have managed to outlive everybody else. And I don't know where you want me to go from there. It's pretty much childhood. At that point, when I was out of school, I got in some trouble with this guy. We stole the car from down at a church and went to Arkansas, of all places. I guess that's the only place I knew anybody else. And ended up being arrested. We did some other stuff on the way down there and the way back. ended up being arrested and went to jail in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Then was brought to trial in Little Rock, and I ended up having to stay in where one of my grandparents were at the time. I ended up having to stay there and was on probation for about 3 years. And I went to school there, I want to say 3 months, something like that. And my grandfather died, and then everybody had to go back to St. Louis, so I went. But I stayed on that probation for whatever the 3 years were and got by with that. When I came back to the city, I started riding motorcycles, and I bought my first one, and I used to run up and down the streets and alleys because I couldn't get, or not the streets, I didn't run on the streets, I ran up and down the alleys because I couldn't get on the street for until I was 16 and got driver's license. That was quite interesting, and I hung around with these guys. Pretty much all the time. And the stint that I had in Arkansas, the 3 months in the ninth grade, was I had 3 months in the ninth grade at Hadley before I got in that trouble. And then I had 3 months of ninth grade in Arkansas. That's been the extent of my education other than I got a high school diploma equivalency when I was 37 because I wanted a real estate license. And that's pretty much how I ran my life. If I wanted something, I just figured out a way to get it. So I did that. And then I took some classes at I forgot what college, doesn't matter. Took some classes in appraisal for the real estate thing later on, and that's, I think that's the only college classes I ever had, was just about real estate appraisal. Let's see, back to the motorcycles. One night in a bar in on South Broadway, one of the guys came up to me and said, "Hey, Betty, I think there's some girls back there at the table that I think you ought to go back there and meet." And so I did. And naturally, they were lesbians. And he knew. I didn't have any words for it, but he knew. And so I met them, and I made sure that I stayed with them long enough to meet everybody they knew so I could have some ways out in the world, and then I just kind of went on from there. And so I was, you know, out at an early age. And there's a good story about a couple of women who worked at a dry goods store on Manchester who sold me my first pair of Levi's. $2.35. They took me to a bar, and it was raided, and they threw me out the back door and into an ash pit. And later on, when Stephen was doing this history, and I've told him this story, I assumed it was Betty C.B. Barr, but it was not. And later on, I think we, in a book somewhere, it says that, but the bar was not Betty Woods' bar at that time, but it was the same building. And it was called the California Bar. And her place was called Betty's California Bar. And so I kind of got that wrong in the history things, but Ian, who researches things, he found out that bar, in the time period that I was talking about, which is the early 50s, that it had women's bowling league hanging out there. So really, it probably was, you know, it was exactly like I thought. But I told Ian, I said, they tell me that I'm wrong. The bar didn't belong to her, so okay. But I'm positive of a couple things. They took me there. They threw me outside, and there were a lot of women there. And I'm pretty sure it was that same building, you know. Just don't forget things like that. Okay, what do you want to move on to? You want to ask some questions?
I guess, can you tell me more about the bar scene and kind of what that was like for you?
Well, at that time, that really early time that I'm talking about at 15, you really just went into a bar and drank, and they had what they called no touch bars, of which this Betty Woods' bar was pretty much. Now, the men's bars that I went into, they were a little bit different. They were kind of touchy-feely, but it was all on the sly, you know. And but the women, you know, you just didn't touch anybody. You just went in a bar and you drank. And they still got raided. One of the things I can tell you is that when you stepped in the bar, you needed to know whether you were butch or femme. Not, there was just rules, you know, that you either had to be one or the other. And the conversation now is whether the lesbians were emulating heterosexual marriage, and, you know, and like, who cares, you know, what they were doing. There doesn't have to be a rhyme or reason to whatever. They were making it up as they went along. Somebody asked me one time, did you know that you were, did you know that you were doing historical things back then? I said, no, I was just trying to get from one day to the next. You know, there was nobody out there making rules, you know, for any reason. You had a rule, like you had to take up for yourself, you know. You had to not let people walk on you and stuff like that, and about being the butch and femme. And they had all this stuff in the bar about, you know, like Cindy couldn't buy a drink. You know, I had to go buy the drink. And even in the 80s, I remember being in the Kitty Cat Club, and I was going with this gal by the name of Kim, and Kim went up to the bar, and the bartender looked at me to see if it was okay if she had a drink. And I hadn't had that happen in a long time, and Kim came back to me and said, did I miss something there? Am I not allowed to buy a drink or what? And I said, no, it's fine. But, you know, there are some people, that mentality is, you know, you grew up with it, so you still have some of that mentality. And I have friends who, they're still playing those roles. And that works for them. So, and, you know, I guess your mom and dad, they play a role, you know, most. Me, when I got a little bit older, I pretty much did whatever got in my way. You know, I'm a really good cook. I don't bake much, but I used to be a really good cook. We're talking now, I forget that I'm cooking. You know, oh yeah, I smell that, it's burning. Okay. Probably won't, you know, I'm a halfway decent carpenter or plumber or like, you know, I don't do much electric work anymore, but I could teach you how to do it, you know. But I can't sew. That's my one downfall. I I am not able to sew, not even a button. So the needle just breaks. So you had that to contend with you when you were in the bar, and you never ever just walked up to a femme and said, "Let's dance." You had to go ask the butch first. Can I dance with your lady? You know, and that left us somewhere in the late 70s or early 80s where I personally started saying, "I don't know, ask her. She want to dance with your ass." You know? Are you a good dancer or what? I don't know.
Did that ever cause any problems for you?
Not for me. I used to be 5'9" and like 170 pounds, and with boots on, I was almost 6 foot, so not a lot of people messed with me. I'm probably not even 5'5" now, probably something like 5'4.5" or something, you know. So now my, 235 pounds is in this short body. not that I didn't have words with people. I was known as you didn't mess with me type of person. And plus I rode motorcycles too, and that's always, you know, later on we had a what I want to call a nice bar over on Olive Street. Shelley's Midway was the name of it. Where they wouldn't let me in because I had on a motorcycle jacket and boots, you know. So I said, okay, I guess I'm not coming in here, you know. Because I didn't quit riding motorcycles for a long time. I probably still had motorcycles in my early 40s. I was still riding, you know. I guess I could still ride if they brought one over here and put me on it. So I pretty much carried that stigma with me. And the bars, you had all the rules, but they were the place where you went to find out what was going on. Because there were no telephones back then that in your pocket. There was no computers. When I was growing up, there was no books. There was no TV. And so, you know, you didn't get this stuff that everybody just switches, turns something on now, and they have all this information at their hand. You had to get out there and dig for it, you know, and learn it. So, and there wasn't much going to the library and getting much information until the 70s. So I spent pretty much 20 years with no info except street knowledge. I was at a function Thursday evening and was talking to a couple of young people like you from SLU, and we were chit-chatting, and she said, "Where did you study at?" And I said, "The streets."
Street smarts.
Yeah, I studied at the streets. And I know that's hard for young people to realize about the phones and the information and everything, but it's all very, very true. As your, well, I guess your parents are what, 45? 59. So you're older than I think.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Uh,
pretty much the type of person who I didn't have one night stands or, and I've never been into drugs. I was pretty boring. I was boring. No drugs. Only one time in my life did I let alcohol interfere with my running surrounds. I started drinking a little bit too much and got kind of shaky, and I went, whew, it's not anything I want to do with my life. I think I was about 20. And so I've never had any drug problems or stuff like that. I never did want to lose control, you know, and that was just my thing. So consequently, I did a lot of what would be termed long-term relationships in gay people. You know, like I was with somebody for a couple of years or 6 years or what. And before Cindy, there was I was with this lady for 15 years, and we are still friends. And Cindy and I have been together, I think we're working on 28, so I don't have maybe that many women. You know, it's like I've pretty much been with one, and that was okay with me. I like having a home and stability and working. And Cindy is the first person I've ever been with. Well, I guess maybe the one I was with for 15 years. She had a really good work ethic. And Cindy and I, we're just workaholics. You know, so even if we don't have anything to do, we're workaholics. So, when I got to be, I want to say 30, maybe a little bit older than 30, the bars became less important to me. And I had, trying to think how. I started working at Carter Carburetor. And I worked there 22-23 years, something like that. And during that period of time, I had a restaurant, I had a gas station. So I was pretty into work, and the bars became less important to me, although I still went out with groups, you know, that I knew for special occasions and anniversaries and birthdays and stuff. And I was still out, but I just, being in the bar every night was not my thing. Later on, when the 15-year relationship broke up, and now I forgot how old I was, it was 1983. So, I had a really bad year, or two, maybe three. The 15-year relationship broke up, and I lived on 47 acres out in Cedar Hill, Dittmer, and I had moved my mom out there to take care of her, and she lived in a mobile home, like 300 feet from my house. And my mom got sick and was dying, and the 15-year relationship broke up, and I had a, I guess maybe what you would call a lot of real estate. I had a lot of real estate. The girl I was with, Charlotte, we had a lot of real estate. And the interest rates jumped from, like, I want to say, 8% to 19% sort of overnight, and I was selling real estate. And I had all this real estate. Actually, I was developing a subdivision when this happened, of land that I had. And all of a sudden, it all came tumbling down around me. And so I was scrambling to sell everything I had and get rid of stuff so I could keep up with all of this. And her leaving and my mother dying, it was kind of like a bad year for me. I lost pretty much everything that I had gained in all of that, except that I came out with my credibility. The guy at the bank told me I should have filed bankruptcy, but it didn't set right with me, so I did not do that. But at that time, after my mom passed away and I sold that place I had out there, there was 47 acres and it had 5 houses on it, and a swimming pool and a pavilion and a whole bunch of stuff. And so I sold off 1, 2, 3 houses, and then I sold the rest of it to this guy. And so I came out not owing any money, and I had 2 or 3 houses left that were outside of that complex. And I didn't come out with very much money, but I come out with all of my bills paid and her bills paid, and that was good for my soul. So, and I came back into the city. And I had a friend who owned an apartment complex. And I called her up and I said, "You got an apartment for me?" And she said, "Have I got an apartment for you?" "I'm getting married. I'm moving to Illinois. Come over here and live in my apartment and run my building for me." So I did that for about 14 years. And in that period of time, I was really depressed, you know, because after I had a grieving process for my mother, then I realized that I had never grieved my relationship. So, which that sent me into a whole nother thing. And I met this young kid who insisted that I go see somebody. And I said, "You know, my name's Betty Neely. I take care of my own problems, blah, blah, blah." And, but I finally went to see somebody and helped me tremendously. And she said, I can't remember how long it went, doesn't matter. She said to me one day, "I think you ought to be running your own train now." And I was working at over here on Brentwood at a place called Essen Hardware. My Carter carburetor moved out of town to make a sequence here. Carter carburetor moved out of town before the thing happened with my relationship and my mother. And I was selling real estate, plus owning all this real estate, and with the interest rate things, everything kind of fell apart. So I had worked at a restaurant under the table, and then I started working for the Essen Hardware. And I don't know, it was some ridiculous low amount of money. And I was working there when the counselor, I guess she was, told me that I need to be running my own train. So, at that time, I started painting some rooms for these women who came in the hardware store, who said, and I'm very knowledgeable about all of that stuff, anything to do with houses and that. And then, you know, "Come over and do this for me, come over and do that for me." And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I started doing that, and then I told the people at the hardware store, I just want to work nights. So I, in the mornings from 8 o'clock until 12 o'clock, I would do painting and laying tile floors and all this kind of stuff. And then this lady hired me to clean up her house that she was going to sell it. And the real estate agent told her, you got to get this house clean and presentable. So I started working on that. And so I started this company called Clean Cetra. And after a month, I'm like, Betty, the money's in the cleaning. You know, you could starve to death waiting for, this was in the 80s, waiting for somebody to hire you to paint their whole house. You know, a woman to paint their house. So I started doing the cleaning, and whenever I started making more money in the 4 hours than I was making at the hardware store, I quit. And I went from zero to $160,000 the second year. So it's gross, not money in my pocket. But, you know, I was pretty proud of that night. And we had, I don't know, 10 or 12 employees at different times. And, but I would never, after the experience with owing all this money, I had to have that cash to pay for it. I wouldn't go in debt. I'm not even sure I had a credit card. Maybe Sears to buy vacuum cleaners with. And finally I went in debt because I needed to buy a new truck for the business. So anyway, and that's what I was doing. Now meanwhile, this kid who had forced me into seeing this counselor is long gone. That's what I was doing when I met Cindy. And there was like 8 years in between the 15-year relationship and her. And I lived with somebody for a couple years in there. And I always kind of felt like everybody was just passing through, you know, was not important. And then whenever I met Cindy, I really didn't want to do that either because she's like 25 years younger than me. But we talked about it a lot, and we just decided, okay, you know, we'll do this if it lasts 6 months or 6 years. We'll just do it, you know, go on. And so it worked. So,
how'd you meet her?
I was going with this gal by the name of Kim, and she was in her first relationship. I think she was like 26. With her first relationship with a woman, and the woman she was going with and the woman I was going with were friends, were best friends actually. And so we went to the hospital to see this one friend, and I met her there. And then a couple years later, I broke up with this girl, and she broke up with that girl. And she called me, basically, because she didn't have any friends outside of that relationship. And so I friended her for about 10 months. And then I said, hey, I don't want to do this friends crap anymore. So, you know, that's all I could take of that. But I was seeing other people, you know, so. Like I said, I've always been really busy, you know, with fingers and a lot of fire. So she came in, and we ran the company together for, I can't remember when I sold it to her, But I had a lot of problems with my back, and I had to quit working. And so whenever I did that, I went on disability. I think when I was 61, I don't know, something like that. And so I sold the company to her so she could continue running it and I could get my disability. And then in 98, whenever the hell that was, they fixed my back and gave me my life back. Yes. So that was a good thing. Since the back, I've had two knees. And if they keep making parts, I guess I'll keep me.
Give them to me.
Yeah. I don't know. Ask me some questions. We moved here 22 years ago. We've been working on this house for 22 years.
It's beautiful. How has your experience been with the St. Louis LGBTQ community? This is Lizzie Kehoe. I am back with Betty Neely. We just paused for a moment to regroup. Now we're back again. Could you tell me a little bit more about your experience living in St. Louis, how the LGBTQ community has been?
After the bars, before I got involved with Cindy, I met these people. I met this person at the Kitty Cat Club called Toddie Dunham. And she was managing a softball team, and softball was something I always did. And so I met her, and she was getting together a group of softball players to form a team to go to the gay games. 1987-1988 was when I met her. So myself and my employees became their biggest supporters. We would, when we get off from work, we'd go wherever their game was and cheer them on. And then we started having all of these bowling events and potlucks and blah, blah, blah type stuff together, money to get this group to Vancouver in 1990. And in the process of knowing Toddie, I met Chris Kleindies, who owns Left Bank Books, and her present girlfriend. Her girlfriend at that time, Deb Law, and all of these other awesome lesbians who got things done. And I so wanted to emulate them.
And, running their own trains.
Huh?
Running their own trains.
Yeah, running their own trains. And so I did. I got involved with that. And Toddie, who had a heart attack, could not fly, and asked me to drive her to Vancouver, and I did. And there's no way I can convey, by the time we hit, I want to say Ohio, and turned left to go to Vancouver, British Columbia, that I saw all of these people with these rainbow flags, and every place we went to eat, there were gay people, and every place we slept in a motel, there were gay people. By the time we hit the Canadian place where you go into Canada, and they said, you know, they asked me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the gay games. You know, Tommy almost died over in the other seat. I had never experienced anything like that, been with that many people. Neither had she. It was just the most awesome thing I ever got involved in. You know, there was 7,500 athletes there, and one of the greatest experiences in my life. And I became very involved with Team St. Louis at that time, or you know, I was already involved, and I became even more involved. And with things that were going on in St. Louis, like the women's movement and all sorts of things, I became involved in, I guess, the, not the bar scene, but the political, the Let's Move It Forward group then. And since then, that's one of the biggest parts of my life. I'm still involved with Team St. Louis, although I no longer, I'm not going this year. I guess this is the first year I haven't went. I have shot pool all over the world. Vancouver, New York, Amsterdam, Sydney, Australia. What's the two biggest towns? Not Toronto, the other
Montreal.
One. Montreal. I shot pool in Montreal. Cleveland, Ohio. That's the last one. And they're going to Paris, and I'm not going this time. I've already been to Paris, and I can't afford it, so there. I probably could, at my age, I probably could ask the gay games, and they would pay my way, but there's other people more deserving to go, you know, that are going to participate, and I could no longer see well enough to shoot pool in Cleveland, and I, you know, I knew at least six or seven people there from other events, and I told them, gather around, and I will teach you how to lose gracefully. So, I, you know, it's pretty much not worth it. Like I say, if I hadn't have been to Paris before, it would have been. But when I went to Amsterdam, I went to Paris first and drove. So, okay, and I've got all wound up in. I have been involved with Team St. Louis. Two of the centers, two of the LGBT centers I have volunteered at. There's probably not many places I haven't volunteered. Volunteered with SAGE. I had a little experience with SAGE. I volunteered to do whatever this transgendered person needed to do. I started out visiting. So that was their rules. You know, you could go and visit. And I actually did this because I wanted to learn about transgender. Well, that is not the way to learn about transgender because they're not going to open up to you. And so anyway, then we severed our ties with Sage. And I just started taking her where she needed to go, like the beauty shop, because their rules would not allow me to take her in my car, you know, because of the repercussions of somebody suing. So anyway, when I say I severed my tie, my agreement with them about her, we severed that. And then I took her. 4 years I did this, and I wasn't any smarter about transgendered people than I was before. But I wanted to try and understand that, you know. And I had one of the counselors at the center say to me, about wanting to know more about him. Okay, Betty, tell me who you are. Tell me why you are who you are. Well, you can't do that. You have no idea. I'm assuming that's the way it is with the transgendered people. I have, through association with Team St. Louis, you know, we've done the liquor booth at Pride for like 15, 16 years, because most people in Team St. Louis are very honest and probably don't need the money to be a petty thief, you know, like to take drink money. And we have run their alcohol booths forever, so I'm involved with them in that way. What other groups? Well, that OLOP group, the people who did that, they're associated with the OLOP group, but they're not them. They're a little bit too old for me, and I tried to be involved with them a couple of times, and they're just way too stodgy. Is that a good word? Okay. We'll go for, they're really boring. Stodgy and boring, and so I couldn't handle that. But the group that did the oral surgery, now those are really some cool people. And let's see, what else? Sage, well, I've been involved in Sage. And Promo, I've stuffed envelopes for them and gave money to them and been a part of that since before it was called Promo and it was called something else, and I can't think of the name of it. Doesn't matter. Somebody knows it. a few years ago, 10 years ago to be exact, I started a thing that we now call Party in the Park for all of the old lesbians who don't go to the bar anymore and who are not involved in anything, to be able to see each other and be together and know what's happening. And that has been one of the most awesome things I've ever done in my life. I had it at my house here for 3 years, and I have it like 9 steps up the back porch. And during one of these parties that I had in my house, I came outside, and I could visually see 60 women from that step. And at various stages of sitting down, standing up, drinking, eating. And I have a rather large driveway. And there's these two people standing out in the driveway with big grins all over their face, so happy to see whoever is coming down the driveway, which I can't see that. But I thought to myself, wow, this is cool, you know. And this year it was the 10th year, and I did shirts. And I found out that you couldn't put 50 years on the back of a shirt, but I tried. And it was a very rewarding thing. There was about 100 people there. And not all of us were decrepit. There are some younger people in the mix that I have invited because I think they're important to the community. And some are there because they married into it. In one girl's case, her mother, who is the only one there older than me, she's just, what do they call it, grandfathered in because of her mother. And one kid, because she was such a great softball player, and like from 12 on, she's always been hanging around on the edges until she got old enough to be involved. I think she's 50 now. So, uh, I've been I've had my my 15 minutes of fame, and I'm going to read this to you.
Pausing really quickly. And we are back.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good. Will you describe what you're holding?
I'm holding a 9x9 glass, stained glass, and it has the rainbow colors on the side of it in little triangles, and it's an award, and it said TSL, that's Team St. Louis, Hall of Fame Legacy Award, in appreciation of your enthusiasm, commitment, and passion. Presented to Betty Neely, Team St. Louis. We demonstrate what? Tolerance, friendship, and understanding can achieve. This world needs a lot more of these things, and we can give it. Everyone is welcome in our community. As an example, we like anyone who likes us. Tom Waddell, activist, Gay Games founder. And I would like to speak about this guy. I have a clip of him. Well, he's the guy who started the Gay Games. It was his idea. He developed it. He was in the 60s, he was in the Olympics, and he was in Saudi Arabia in the service. He was a doctor, and when he came back, he was in San Francisco, and he said right away he got involved in sports, and so they had this dinner. And he was awarded some special award. And he said, probably because I was in the Olympics. And he said, but out of my mouth on the stage, I said, wouldn't it be great if San Francisco invited the world to play games in San Francisco? And he is doing a... He's doing an interview at the time when he's saying this on this clip I have. And his arms are back, and he's got on a t-shirt that says Gay Games, whatever. Kind of a skinny guy. And he said, so when I said this, everybody jumped up, they started clapping their hands and saying, yay! And he said, I had to follow up on that. So... He was a simple, I had to follow up on that. So anyway, Team St. Louis gave me this plaque, and now every year, somebody who has done something great, and I get to vote on their name, gets the Betty Neely Legacy Award. And that's one of my... what do you call it? My 5 minutes of fame. Every year, somebody's going to have to read my name. the other one here is for, and it's also a triangle, a very colorful triangle. It says, Betty Neely, Grand Marshal, St. Louis Pride Parade 2013. And one of the reasons I was chosen is to celebrate the past to awaken the future. And I thought that was pretty cool. I was paired with our town's Shane Cohen, who's the 25th Ward alderman, a gay alderman. And so that's my fame and stuff from also got a hat. Yay. Anyway. So, and I'm still involved with things. I was at a meeting Thursday evening of a happy hour, rather, between St. Louis Village. That's a organization in the Central West End that keep older people in their homes. It's called Village, St. Louis Village. And Sage, they had a happy hour together because the St. Louis Village wants to be inclusive. You know, they want to be inclusive in it. So they paired up and had a happy hour. It turned out really well. This is when I told you I was sitting with two young ladies. And
yeah.
From SLU. I don't know. What else? Ask me some questions.
I guess, what's something that has like changed your perspective on the, I guess, like the various changes that have like occurred within the LGBTQ community and like are still occurring? Kind of like what's been something that's been really like perspective changing for you, or maybe like surprised you, or has been inspiring for you to see?
One of the things that has been a surprise to me is that I don't much like being, I forgot the word you use when you're mainstream.
Okay.
Like gay people being mainstream. We used to have a thing called Wired Women, and we brought in all sorts of comedians and singers and whatever from all over and had these dances here. And, you know, you could no longer do that because you can't get anybody interested in just, you know, and buying these tickets. So you can't have these people coming here, you can't pay them. So we lost that by merging in with, you know, everybody goes wherever the hell they want to go anymore. So you have no individuality a lot. And this is a conversation I had with Colin Murphy, who used to be the editor of The Vital Voice. And he said, I don't think I like this. And I said, me either. And I want to say this was 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I said, we're losing our culture. And he said, right. And, but that's what you give up. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, now I have to rethink the whole black thing, because I've always said, how come they have to have their own pride and their own this and their own that? And I'm like, that's why, because they're losing their culture. Because I feel the same way about us being so mainstream that we can't do those individual things. I don't want the straight world to be the only thing I live in. You know, I want to be able to, it's okay with me, but I want to be able to step over here and like go to the party in the park with 100 people that are my people. And I you don't foresee that. And so don't let that surprise you when you get older and I don't really like this, whatever the hell it is, you know. It's okay you know, it's not anything you're going to kill yourself over. But you don't really understand that you're not going to like that. Do I want people respecting me because I'm gay? No. I want people to accept me because I am a human being. I am a woman. I am Betty Neely. And then I am a lesbian. You know, that to me is the sequence of things. And that people should allow me to live however I want to live because I allow them to live however they want to live. Do I have opinions about it? Yes. You know, but, you know, I don't like people that mistreat kids, so I have an opinion. So I didn't, you know, that's not been the best thing that has ever happened to us, is to be, I mean, it is and it isn't. I don't know. So, it's a, what do you call it? It's something to be conversed about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation piece for damn sure.
For sure. So any final things you'd like to talk about or want to add?
Young people, young people just need to keep carrying on. You know, all of these things that have opened up to the thing I was just talking about that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like the word queer. Actually, there's an article in a newspaper that says Betty Neely don't like the word queer. Because when I was growing up, there was a very nasty, you know, nobody likes to be called that. So the young people are now taking that, and that's their mantra? How do you say that word?
Mantra.
Okay, you know, whatever.
Tomato.
That's, if they choose that, that's okay. I just don't happen to think it's a cool word. I'd much rather be called a lesbian, or a homosexual, or whatever, than queer. It's not a word I like. But then, I don't like snot either, so. Who cares? But I think they should embrace everything, think about it, and carry on. And move all the rocks. Don't let things be left unturned. Don't be my age and say, I wish I had it. Do it. You know, if you go in debt, do it. If people think you're crazy, do it.
Is there a rock that you wish you would have turned over?
Yeah, it's called education.
Okay.
And that is my own fault. You know, at any of those times when I was doing any of those million other things, I could have been working my butt off to go back to school. And I still, at this point, can't even write a proper business letter because I don't even know where the commas and the hyphens and the, you know, I can't do that. And spell check helps a lot, but at least I spell the word right, whether it's in the right place or not. But I wish I had at least went back to school and learned some things.
Mm-hmm.
Although life is a pretty good education in itself, you know, and I wouldn't I wouldn't call me stupid by a long shot, but there's a lot of things that I wish I had of known and experienced as I was moving along. Not particularly now. I don't have time. I don't have time to learn anything new. I'm too busy putting my teeth in or my hearing aids or or soaking my feet in something, you know. You get to the point in life where your main objective is to take care of yourself and do all the things that you should do. So, and that's kind of where I'm at. And I do what I can on the outside. And I no longer try to be good looking, just neat and clean. If I get where I'm neat and clean, that's okay.
Maybe brush your teeth.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to remember to clean your teeth and
right.
put them in and out.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me and sharing your story. It's great to hear.
Well, I wish I could remember some other stuff. And was there questions you wanted to ask me from the book?
I mainly had questions about Team St. Louis and how that was for you, because I feel like that was a big part of the book, and how the Grand Marshal, the Pride Parade, and I had a couple of questions about like early life stuff, like which I think you kind of got with like going to the bars and the motorcycle, meeting Cindy. I feel like you covered a lot. Do you want any to mention anything else?
No. I'm okay if you're okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.